Despite the age of the machine and the disc, the music was fresh and pure, untainted. Christy was standing next to her man, and she reached out and took his hand. Ryan squeezed her fingers, closing his good eye, feeling a glimmer of what life might have been like before the Holocaust turned America into the Deathlands. Doc folded Lori in his arms. The dim light of the lamps was strong enough to show the glint of tears among the stubble on his deeply lined cheeks. The sounds of the Mescalero camp outside the walls of baked clay drifted from them until the whole world was the music.
Guess that's it. Don't figure that'll be playing for us anymore.
At least we heard it the once. Gaia, it was so beautiful. What was it called, Doc?
Doc was engaged in fishing out his swallow's eye kerchief.
One moment, please. Upon my soul, I had forgotten that such sounds had ever, ever existed. That was the canon in D by the German Pachelbel. So beautiful.
On most evenings, the group would sit around, talking about the day gone, or about the days to come. With a potential firefight the following morning, there could have been much to say. But the age-old music seemed to affect everyone in the same way.
Real tired. Gonna get some sleep.
Yeah, I gotta strip and field clean the blasters, get them ready for tomorrow.
Doc and Lori made no excuse, simply wandering off behind their section of blankets, arm in arm.
Leaves you and me, lover. Time to turn in?
Could be. Yeah, it could just be.
To Ryan and his contemporaries, the idea that the sexual act should be best performed in conditions of privacy, behind locked doors, and preferably in the dark, would have seemed absurd. In the Deathlands, privacy was a privilege reserved for the very rich or the very powerful. And the two things normally went together. Of the hundreds of times that Ryan had done it, only a handful had been in anything approaching seclusion. Tonight was no exception. But it was better, far better than most times. The light was dim, and the blankets pressed in around them, giving the lovers the illusion of being on their own. All they had to do was shut out all the other sounds around them. Jack was moaning in his sleep from the combination of pain and drugs the shaman had given him. The soft sounds of oiled metal as the guns were tested by JB. The rustling of straw and an occasional giggle from Lori.
I love you, Ryan. Don't say anything back. I just wanted you to know that being with you and loving you is all I want. The only time I'm happy is when I'm with you.
He kissed her on the side of her neck, feeling the pulsing flow from her heart. His hand slid inside her shirt, cupping the firm breast. She'd peeled off the khaki overalls, and he only kept on his brown shirt. It was a relief to feel secure enough in Drowned Squaw Canyon to be able to go to bed and take off clothes and boots. But Ryan made sure his blasters were near to hand by the rolled-up blanket he used for a pillow. Christy pressed against him, and he could taste the sheen of excitement on her skin. Safe in the secluded canyon, Ryan knew this coupling would be sweet. So very sweet. Ryan and JB stood by their ponies, waiting for the half-dozen Apache warriors to join them. The pallid glow in the sky above the lip of the canyon heralded the false dawn. Doc and Lori were still sleeping when Ryan and JB had arisen and dressed, strapping on their weapons. Jack had been awake and called out good luck to them. Christy arose as soon as Ryan stirred, and hastily pulled on her overalls to stand with him until the group left. Cuchillo Oro was the first of the Indians to appear, heeling his pony across the dry, packed earth. He held up a hand to greet them.
Hey, my brothers! Let today be a good day to die!
I wish you wouldn't say that. I'm not figuring on dying just yet.
You make many jests, One-Eye Chills.
I do? Yeah, sure. Hey, Chief, I kind of like it better if you stuck to calling me Ryan Cotter, if that sits all right with you.
And I'm J.B. Dix. I appreciate the honor of being Weapon Strike Fear and all that, but I answer better to my own name.
A girl as slender as a fawn, with liquid brown eyes, came and stood by Cuchillo Oro. She wore a dress of deerskin that was embroidered with hundreds of colored beads in a swirling pattern of suns and arrows. Ryan had noticed her watching Jack Lauren several times during the past day. The war chief reached down from his saddle to pat the girl proudly on the shoulder.
This is my only daughter. She is called Steps Lightly Moon.
The girl hid her face behind her hand, peeking at the two white men. Then she spun on her heel and ran quickly away, darting between the rugged boulders with the speed of a dragonfly.
She's very beautiful, Cuchillo Oro.
She certainly is.
She wishes to talk with Eyes of Wolf.
With Jack? Well, let her go talk. The kid's still doped up to his ears, but I'm sure he'd appreciate a pretty little thing like that to talk to.
My daughter wishes to do more than talk with the Whitehead. She is foolish, and her skull rattles with ideas. She would marry with him.
Marry? What do you think about it, Chief?
They can talk. I have told her. But only if one of your womenfolk is there.
Oh, us womenfolk will keep an eye on things, Chief. Don't you worry.
The rest of the war party arrived, all hard-faced warriors in their late 20s or early 30s, armed with a variety of old rifles.
We ride!
Cuchillo Oro led the way along the narrowing trail toward the entrance to the Box Canyon. Ryan winked at Christy and swung up on the back of his horse. As a concession to the two Anglos, the Apaches had provided them with worn western saddles.
Take care, lover. Good luck, J.B. Bring us womenfolk back a sec man for the pot, you hear me?
They cantered along in the lee of a tall mesa. On top, Ryan could just make out the tumbled ruins of pueblos, old before the first white man appeared on the continent. The sun was beginning to shine above the rim of the range of low hills away to the east. Ryan found such perfect weather unusual. The sky was an unsullied blue, with only the hint of a scattering of fluffy clouds at the edge of seeing to the distant north. The chief led the way, with Ryan and JB in his dust. The rest of the Mescalero brought up the rear. A couple of miles from Drowned Squaw Canyon, on a back trail, they passed the ruins of an old adobe church. Its roof had tumbled in, whitened stumps of rafters showing against the crumbling walls. One window on the western flank of the building remained intact, a cross carved within it. The oak doors swung to and fro on the massive iron hinges, creaking in the soft breeze. Most of the graves had long since disappeared, but one stone, with a winged angel on top of it, remained. Ryan heeled his horse past so that he could try to decipher the faded, wind-scoured inscription. Frederico Garcia Nolan was the name. The dates were no longer legible. Using the angled shadows of the rising sun, Ryan was just able to make out a line beneath. Loving the land, he now sleeps at peace beneath it. Stranger, ride by. Ryan glanced around, looking out across the dramatic land with its sculpted buttes and mesas.
Could be worse places to end up.
A man should not lie beneath the dirt. Out in the open, under the sky and sun and moon, that is the ending for a warrior.
Stones and Faces rode in front of the war party, scouting the trail with extreme caution. Cuchillo had told Ryan that there was little danger of being ambushed by the 7th Cavalry, as they always went out in regular patrols. Also, they didn't know the region as the Mescalero did, with its winding trails, its looming mesas, and its snaking dry riverbeds.
The only danger is to ride blind-eyed into a camp of the Pony Soldiers. They do not come often so far from their rancheria that they need to spend a night away. They leave, as we did, at the dawning. But if they come to Many Deer Canyon, we shall be there before them.
They guided their animals up a gentle slope, rising steadily toward a ridge of higher ground, then looping west, diving down into the cool deeps of a narrow canyon. Finally, following the hand signals of Stones in Face, they reached a natural bowl-like plateau ringed with boulders. It commanded a view across a wide valley, with stunted trees lining the bed of a meandering stream and thick mesquite bushes. At its farther end, there was a sharp-edged notch, barely 10 feet across, which led through to the main trail. The men dismounted.
This is Many Deer Canyon. The Dog Faces will come through the gap and camp while they drink coffee and smoke by the water. That is always their way.
But they might not come today?
They might not come.
And they might not come tomorrow? Or the next day?
Kuchiya crouched by the edge of the plateau, staring out.
Only the spirits know these things. But look, Ryan Calder. See the dust that rises there? I told you, my brother. It will be a good day for us to die.
Of the eight men who stood upon the ridge, watching the lazy spiral of reddish dust, it would not be a good day to die for two of them. The armorer had brought his miniature binoculars with him, foldouts with image intensifiers. He steadied them against the top of one of the rocks, trying to focus on the oncoming patrol.
Too much damn dust. Can't see them properly. Means we can't fight them.
Anglos fear their own running dogs.
Now what the hell is that supposed to mean?
It means that we have fought for the history. That is the right word, history?
How the hell should I know?
The people have fought always. You say you will fight with us, but then you say you cannot because you cannot see. I will fight the pony soldiers. And you stay and be safe and cook and sew beads with the other women.
The warrior's hand gripped the hilt of his saber so hard that his knuckles showed white through the bronze skin.
Is that right? Well, listen, Long Knife, or whatever the hell your name is. I knew a man once that said the talk was cheap, but the price of action is colossal.
Ryan then deliberately insulted Long Knife by calmly turning his back on him, knowing that JB was in a position to chill the Apache if he tried to cold cock him from behind.
Peace, brothers. I draw closer.
JB joined the chief, again easing the focusing screw on the glasses.
Yeah, got him now. There's around a dozen with another out front. Don't seem too worried about any attack. They're cantering along like they were going to a friendly barn raising.
Barn raising? Fire blast. What do you know about raising a damned barn?
Heard him say that on Westy Vids, Ryan. Don't know for sure what it means, but it sounded good, didn't it?
Long Knife was not going to let the argument go. He stood so close to Ryan that the white man could smell his sweat. He turned his face to stare into Ryan's single eye.
You believe I fear you?
No, Long Knife. I don't think you're frightened of me at all.
You think I fear the pony soldiers?
Oh, by the long winter. We're all here for the same reason, you stupid bastard.
It was the response that the Apache wanted. He took two shuffling steps away, drawing the dull steel blade from the makeshift sheath. He waved it in the air, threatening Ryan with it.
You will accept this into your stinking flesh, and you will die, wide-eyed devil.
If I draw this handgun, you'll be on your back looking up at the sun, Long Knife. And the Sekhmen will hear it, and all of this is for nothing.
Kuchiya Oro didn't interfere, watching as the two men faced each other. For several long heartbeats, neither moved. Finally, the chief spoke.
If you wish to fight the Anglo, Long Knife, then do so. Then we can return to the rancheria, for the hunt will be over.
You take the side of the Anglo against your own brother? How can this be?
Kuchioro's hand fell to the hilt of the golden knife.
I am leader here. It is you and it is me, my brother. We must not fight each other.
They're stopping by the stream, unsaddling, so they're resting up for an hour or so.
Now what do we do?
Ryan stared down at the tiny ant-like figures. The horses had been tied in the shade of the trees while the men relaxed, some of them filling canteens at the edge of the stream. The leader was clearly not the yellow-haired general, but a tall, burly man with gingerish hair that was thinning around the top. As Ryan watched him, the man took the bright golden kerchief from his neck and wiped sweat from his forehead. Two sentries were posted, one walking slowly toward them, the other trailing his Springfield carbine as he picked his way back toward the narrow notch at the mouth of Many Deer Canyon. The discipline was evident to Ryan. It wasn't going to be easy to take such an organized force of Sekhmen. He glanced around, looking at the weapons that the Mescalero had brought with them. There was an 1841 muzzle-loading Mississippi rifle in the hands of a tall warrior whose name Ryan didn't know. A Winchester carbine at the side of Stones in Face. Another warrior hefted a sawed-off 12-gauge percussion scatter gun that JB had spotted as a 20th-century replica of a much older English blaster. Kuchiya himself had a long Sharps buffalo gun. The 50-caliber weapon was one that Ryan had used a couple of times in his life, and he admired the accuracy of the gun. It was bound around with silver wire, holding a split stock together, and a pattern of tiny brass nails had been hammered into the butt. Along with his saber, Long Knife was carrying an old Remington pistol. As Ryan glanced at him, Long Knife suddenly vaulted lightly onto the back of his pony. he kicked it in the slats to force it into an instant gallop down the winding trail that eventually led to the floor of the White Canyon, toward the Sekhmen.
Long knife! No!
Ah, fire blast!
The chief turned grimly to Ryan.
I am sorry for my brother, but he must do what he